This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. As always, I like to find the most interesting people I can find on the planet. Tonight, I have a great guest. His name is Mark Scotch. Scotch like butterscotch. Like butterscotch. I want to say like scotch whiskey.
That's what I say.
That's what you say, right?
Yep.
Well, Mark Scotch is an outstanding person. And the reason I'm interviewing him is because we have a mutual acquaintance, a mutual friend. And she is a kidney recipient. She received a kidney, not from Mark, but Mark is a kidney donor. And I'm very fascinated with people and just the whole idea of someone actually giving up a kidney to somebody that they don't even know, to a total stranger. I think that is probably the ultimate demonstration of love for mankind, for humankind. Tell us more about this, Mark. How did you get involved in donating your kidney to a stranger?
Well, it was quite by accident. My wife and I were driving from Wisconsin to Texas a couple winters ago, and we were going through Louisiana. And we just happened to stop for the night and went into a microbrewery, a brew pub, and to have a beer and some dinner. And there's a guy sitting next to me at the bar, actually, and we just started talking. And come to find out, he, after about an hour of talking, he had to go home. And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Yeah, I have to go home and get hooked up to dialysis." He was stage 4 kidney failure, and he went on dialysis every night for 10 hours. And he'd been doing it for a few months already.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was just off the wall. And I didn't expect that. But, you know, my sister-in-law had donated about 14 years ago. And I knew you could donate a kidney and live. But as soon as he said that, I just said, "Well, you know what? I think I can give you one of my kidneys."
A stranger.
Well, I knew him for like an hour.
Well, yeah. And you met him in a bar.
Yeah. Well.
Wow. Come on. That's so interesting. And so you felt compelled to do that. So you had a conversation with him that was so compelling, so deep. You felt enough compassion for this stranger to give up a kidney.
Yeah. You know, he was so full of energy and so full of life. And it just took me by surprise. And it just seemed, when he said, "I'm looking for a kidney," he wasn't asking. He was just telling me that, like you would tell a friend, you know. And it's just like, you know what? It's just for some reason, it just, the way he came across to me in that short period of time created that empathy, like I guess you could say. And it just, I just thought that was the thing to do.
Well, it says a lot about you. So tell me what the process was like. What happened next?
Well, he gave me the name of his coordinator, which happened to be in Shreveport.
Louisiana.
Yep, Shreveport, Louisiana. And then I started the process of talking to this coordinator at the transplant facility. Found out I was going to have to travel to Shreveport a number of times to get this accomplished. Evaluation, blood work, pre-op, surgery. The thing that kind of was bothering me, I mean, that thing didn't bother me too much, the whole idea of going through the process. But what did concern me was if there are complications after surgery, you have to go to the same hospital that did the surgery. So in the back of my mind, I was concerned about that. But then in the process of learning about donation, I really got on the internet and started learning for myself what it would take. And I was just amazed at how much I did not know about the transplant community. And when I found out I was going to have to go to Louisiana so many times, I decided to plan this, maybe some bike rides down the Mississippi. Because I like to ride bike, and there was these levee roads and some of these back roads by the river. And I thought, well, I'll just, ride some of those trails and some of those roads, on some of the trips. So I was kind of fomenting a plan to ride a bike for part of that. But at the same time, I was starting to learn about the kidney community. And I think when I read that 13 people die every day in this country waiting for a kidney, I decided to turn those joyrides into a ride to share what my wife and I had learned and talk to as many people as we could about the fact that there's such a dire and urgent need for living kidney donors. So in that process, I got to talking with a person who directed me to the National Kidney Registry. It's nkr.org. And I found out that there isn't really a standardized way to do this in this country, but the NKR registry allows people to do what's called a voucher program. And they've got about 100 hospitals in this registry. They have a pool of recipients and a pool of donors and hospitals all across the country. And I was able to get all my evaluation done, my surgery done, everything done up in Madison, Wisconsin. I did not have to go to Shreveport. And Hugh Smith, the guy that I met, I did have to ask him if he wanted to get registered in Jackson, Mississippi, because that was part of the NKR hospital pool. And he did, of course. And because of that, I was able to donate Madison, name him as my voucher recipient, which gave him priority on the wait list. And within a few short months, then he got a kidney.
Wow.
Yeah. So you don't have to be a match. You don't have to be in the same area. You don't have to do it at the same time even. And one of the best things about this voucher program that I learned was that my kidney went to the best match at the time. And Hugh, my friend, when he was ready, he got the best kidney at the time. And that what that means is that there's less chance of rejection, less pills to take and all that, you know, medication. So it's such a big deal, and it's fairly new. It's only a couple of years old. So that's my story, basically.
That's really interesting. And you've started something that's called, I don't know if you started it, but the Oregon Trail. Tell me what the Oregon Trail is.
Well, the Oregon Trail turned into this ride that I was going to do to Mississippi just for fun. I decided to make it into an awareness ride. And a friend of mine suggested I call it the Oregon Trail.
I like the name.
So I can't even take credit for it. But it's I decided to ride my bicycle from Wisconsin to from my house to Hugh's house in Natchitoches, Louisiana. So I put a route together. My wife drives our car. She's my support vehicle if I ever need anything. So far, luckily, we haven't really had to do too much with it. And so we do it together. I cover the first ride. I was putting in on average about 80 miles a day. We had 4 days that averaged over 100 miles, 4 days in a row. But
that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot on a mountain bike too, as
yes.
People can attest.
Yes.
But I don't like riding in traffic. I don't even have a road bike, so I use my mountain bike set up like a gravel bike. And then because my kidney went to New York, I decided to ride to New York as well. And but just turned out logistically better for us to ride from Martha's Vineyard. I left Martha's Vineyard on September 19th and have been riding.
Of this year. So it's just like a week ago.
Yep. Just a little over a week.
Wow. Okay. All right. So how did it go?
Good. So far, it's been going great. We've had great weather when we left Martha's Vineyard. I had a friend that rode with me for a few days. The only mishap we had was a couple days ago when my seat post broke on my bike.
Oh.
Along with the seat. And we couldn't get the post out of the frame. For people that ride bikes know what that means. So I took it to the bike shop. We couldn't get it out. We had to break it off. And I ended up going to a small machine shop, family machine shop, and we fabricated a piece and got the bike back going again, so it's working fine.
Great. Thank goodness. Now, how many miles have you logged? I know it's been like over 1,600 miles.
Yeah, the whole ride from Martha's Vineyard to Wisconsin's right at 1,600. I'm not even halfway yet. Halfway is going to be between Erie, Pennsylvania, and Cleveland, Ohio. And so I'm right now in Medina. I'm almost to Niagara Falls. So I'm almost halfway.
What motivates you to do this? This is a huge undertaking.
Well, I think it's a combination of the fact that I like to ride bike. I like to see the country by bicycle. There's just so many things you don't get to see. It's so different from a car. And I've done a lot of even motorcycle riding. It's even different than a motorcycle. There's a joke about, you know, stopping to smell the roses. Well, we just kind of slow down in all these communities. We can smell them as we ride by.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I like the idea of riding a bike, and I've done some ultra distance riding, some long distance, so I'm used to that. I know what that takes. And I just thought it was a great way to meet people one-on-one, people that don't know. I mean, people that are in the transplant community, they know what's going on. They know the facts. But the people, the solution to this 13 people dying every day is people out on the street that don't know what's going on, basically. And I feel like I was like that. My wife and I were like that. So I'm trying to meet people one-on-one. We're stopping at any place with media, with we've done mayoral proclamations. I was at the University of Rochester Medical Center yesterday. One of their surgeons that heads the transplant department rode with me 20 miles. He's a nice biker. In Medina, yeah, small town of Medina here in New York. Tomorrow I'll be going into their hospital and their dialysis center. We're going to be doing a program there. So Cleveland Clinics is going to be hosting me for a media shoot, if you will, to try and get word out. And just all along the way, we've just contact as many people as we can to try to get the word out that there's an urgent and dire need. And I'm just trying to prove that, I'm 65 and a half years old.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that you can donate a kidney and go back to what you were doing before. It doesn't change your lifestyle.
So what did you do before this? I mean, you obviously, I wouldn't say that. I'm imagining that you had a vocation, a career throughout your life. Like, what did you do before you got involved with this?
I did a lot of traveling for work. I traveled to paper mills. I worked in paper mills for different companies. And so I did a lot of traveling, and I always had my bike with me. Every chance I got, I rode my bike, or I had something like a canoe or a kayak on top of my Jeep. So up in the Midwest, visiting paper mills. So I would, spend my off time doing things like that anyway. So it was pretty natural to just decide to ride a bike.
So you did, but you're doing what you love.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to incorporate my lifestyle into my work, vice versa.
And it's nice to know that there's a healthy man riding around town with one kidney. I don't know, but there's a lot of healthy people riding around town with two kidneys. What would you say to people that would hesitate to donate a kidney to someone?
I think the most important thing is to just develop some kind of curiosity. If somebody's listening to this podcast, just go to nkr.org, its website, and just noodle around in there and read a little bit. I don't think I was ready to donate. My sister-in-law donated 14 years ago, and I never had any inclination to ask her one question, basically. But I think it's important that everybody can be an advocate. They can learn something. And I think learning about the voucher program is enough to really understand what's going on. And then if a person is in a conversation with somebody and they hear about, well, you got to match this, you got to do this, you got to do that, you can dispel some of these myths. So I think the most important thing is not so much learning about being a donor, but learn about it. And then I think the donor part will come later if a person is so moved. The biggest thing is to get evaluated.
Yeah.
They only take healthy people. So the decision to donate can only be made after you're cleared to donate. And so, and that takes, going and get evaluated. So.
Right, right. So obviously you must be very healthy or you wouldn't be able to give up a kidney so fast. I know that I'm just going to say the person that connected us for this interview, her name is Lisa Thompson. She's a kidney recipient, not your kidney. She got somebody else's kidney. What she said to me, I've had many conversations with her. As a matter of fact, I've interviewed her. She said that it's not so much that when you talk about kidney donation that you're going to be asking people, hey, can I have your kidney? It's just to talk about it so people are aware. So you felt something for that guy that you were sitting having a beer with or whatever. So something about the conversation, something about him and his situation made you feel compelled to give up a kidney for him, which I find that remarkable.
Well, it was a time in my life, I think, that was critical. I had retired. I had been retired for a couple of years, and I was kind of wondering, like, okay, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And people kind of pause and take in, just kind of think about, I don't know of any other way or any better way than to give a kidney to really save somebody or to do something in a charitable way. I mean, it's kind of like an ultimate gift because you can actually save someone's life. And in my case, because of the voucher program, I started a chain, so to speak, to save two lives. My friend in Louisiana got the voucher, and then somebody in New York got my kidney, who I don't know who that is even. But so two people actually benefited. And I think part of it was the fact that I thought it was kind of an instant thought. I mean, I there wasn't a process, but I instantly thought, you know, I'm 65. I've had a good life. If there is something inside of me that's still, you know, viable to help somebody live a normal life, all these people are asking for is kidneys so they can be normal, something that we all take for granted. It was just a combination of things that just hit me at the right time, I think.
So it was time. It sounds like it was timing. You know, I had a cousin who had kidney disease as a young kid, 11 years old, but he survived it. But he walks around with one dead kidney. I don't know what that means. One functions, one doesn't. But I've seen what kidney disease can look like in a young person. But getting off of that, getting back to you, do you have a blog or a video log of your profile so people can actually take a look at what you're doing?
Yes, I've got a Facebook page called The Oregon Trail.
The Oregon Trail.
Yeah, it'll try and take you to the game or to the state, but it's Oregon like kidney Oregon, The Oregon Trail. And then I have a Facebook page as well called theoregontrail.org.
So that's where people can find out all about you. I think people should go to it. Go to Facebook, look up The Oregon Trail. And I think what you're doing is acts really very much, I'm very awestruck by it, you know, because you know the fact that it's a total stranger, but the way you talk about it, you make it sound like such a casual decision.
Well, you know, in the beginning, I was very cavalier about it, to the point of I had to stop and check myself a little bit because it is a big deal.
It's a surgery.
Yeah, yeah, and I wasn't too concerned about the surgery because I felt that it's almost routine. The doctors know exactly what they're going to do, and you have to be healthy to donate. So, you know, I was going into the hospital as a healthy person. I came out as a healthy person. I mean, that's pretty unusual in a hospital setting, if you think about it. I wasn't too concerned because I have faith in the medical community, and I didn't have a problem with that. I really didn't have any issue like what could happen. I could get hit by a car tomorrow going across the street. That's about how I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
The odds.
So what was it like? How long was your recovery from the surgery? Because I know a lot of people will want to know that. If they're considering it, that might be a question. Like, how long did it take you to recover from the surgery?
Well, I went in like 6:30. It was my surgery, 6:30 in the morning. And I had my surgery. And by, I think, 12 o'clock, I woke up for a couple minutes, fell back asleep. And then I woke up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, feeling pretty good. I was walking in a few hours to get up right away as soon as you can. Spent the night and I went home the next day.
Wow.
That's not uncommon, but on the ride home, we live about 90 miles from the hospital, and on the ride home, I definitely could have probably spent one more day in the hospital and it wouldn't have hurt at all.
Wow.
But the recovery. So then they have to make an incision, a small incision, to get the kidney out. The rest of the surgery is all done laparoscopically. So the only restrictions I had were 6 to 8 weeks of 10-pound weight limit.
In terms of lifting?
Yeah, because you don't want to risk a hernia because they actually had to. And they do such interesting things now. When they made the incision so they can get the kidney out, make a cut right below your belt buckle, you know, where your belt buckle would be. And they don't even cut the muscle. They cut the skin and they separate the muscle so it doesn't have to heal back.
They take it from the front, not the back?
Correct. And that seems odd, but I guess it's hard to get at the kidney from the back because of the spine and ribs and things like that. Yeah. So they go from the front, front kind of side. Yeah. For me, it was pretty uneventful. You know, I definitely had some fatigue the first week to 10 days. I was tired. I slept a lot, and that's normal. But you know, I think I could have gone back to I worked in sales. I think I could have been back to work in a week if I had been working gently, so to speak. But I started riding my bike after about a month, slowly, you know, and just kind of took my time with it.
Okay. Well, I'm so impressed. You know, I'll also mention to the audience that part of your trip from Martha's Vineyard, and I think you went from Martha's Vineyard, and you actually passed through Yorktown, New York.
Correct.
So you're kind of local to where the show is broadcast. We broadcast out of Peekskill, New York, which is not far from there, which is basically the next town. And so did you have some kind of fanfare? Did you get good media coverage? I imagine you should have.
Lisa actually was very instrumental with Yorktown. She got the mayor involved.
Oh, good.
Legislature guy. And I think there might have been a state senator there. It's kind of running together on me, but they read a proclamation just to try to build curiosity in the community. Okay, what's going on here? You know, why is it a big deal about giving a kidney? And what's going on? Just to try to pique curiosity. So yes, Yorktown did a great job. We had dinner there at one of the restaurants. It was fun.
And it sounds like you got well-deserved recognition. And the recipient, you have no idea who that is, except that they're from New York State. Is that correct?
Yes, my kidney, I don't know who got it. I have reached out a couple times, but it's the type of thing where both parties have to reach out. And evidently the other party wants to remain anonymous, and that's absolutely fine with me. I mean, I know that whoever it is very appreciative, and that's enough for me.
That's a beautiful thing that you did. I don't know that everybody would be so inclined to do something like that. I mean, there are many people that don't even want to put organ donor on their driver's license because they don't want people to know that they're willing until the last minute. So for some people, it's a very sensitive subject, organ donation, whether you're doing it being like a living recipient, or you just put something on your driver's license so people know if, God forbid, something happens to you, you know, here, take my organs. I might die, someone else might live. But I think it's wonderful that you offer that to of yourself.
Yes. I mean, since I've got involved in this, I've learned a lot, and I understand that there are a lot of people are hesitant to become deceased donors. I guess I've been one just because I thought, you know, as a kid, it's like, well, you know, why not? I know there's some people that have fear that something, you know, somebody might decide that, hey, we need these organs.
He's half dead, so let me take it, even though he could live.
Yeah. And I have a hard time believing that really happens. And, you know, but it's still a big decision to become a deceased donor. Obviously, it's a little bit bigger commitment to become a living donor. But, you know, one of the things I learned is that 13 people die every day. That means that there aren't enough deceased donors. And I think I read that 3 out of 1,000 people die in such a way that their organs can be used.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very low number, because basically you have to die in the hospital in a controlled setting, so to speak. And so that's, you know, doesn't happen that often. So, yeah, there's definitely living donors. And we're losing ground because of high blood pressure and diabetes. Those are things that really attack the kidneys. And people can actually save someone else's life by not even giving up a kidney. They can save someone's life by taking care of their own health and not having to need a kidney themselves one day.
Oh, there you go. See, we don't think about things like that, do we?
No.
Or maybe that just would be me. I don't think about.
No, I've said that to some pretty. I've said that a few times to some people, and they were like, "Wow," because you know, people that have kidney disease, they have no choice in the matter, and so why don't we try to save a kidney for them? That, and if we all kind of watch our health as best we can. I mean, I'm not a prime specimen for health. I mean, if you saw me, you wouldn't think I could, you know, ride.
And you did meet the guy in a bar.
I guarantee if you saw me, you wouldn't think I could ride a bike 10 miles, let alone, you know, 16 top or 100. But you know, we have to start taking care of our own health, because that number is going to go up more than 13. It's going to go up.
What would you suggest with regard to living healthier?
Well, I think just the basic things, trying to eat better food and just try and get some exercise. Start small, because high blood pressure and, you know, diabetes, obesity, they all lead to these kind of outcomes. So, you know, just to try to start doing things a little bit, you know, every day, try to get on a program. And I don't think you have to be extreme. I try to avoid eating anything out of a box.
Oh, okay. That's a smart thing. Yes.
Yeah, just small things.
Try to keep it like fresh vegetables as opposed to
processed food.
That's what I was looking for, as opposed to processed food. So your kidneys are healthy. And so I think it's an interesting point of view to keep yourself healthy. How did you say it again?
If an individual stays healthy themselves.
Yes.
They may never need a kidney. Instead of taking one because of maybe poor health habits causes you to lose a kidney, if you can improve your health habits and not need a kidney, that kidney can go to someone else. And in effect, you're actually saving someone else's life by not taking a kidney.
Wow. So usually these kidney disease, from what I understand, usually starts for older people. I've seen what people go through on dialysis. That's not a fun thing. I've watched it. It's really sad to watch the slow progression and spiral down. Every single day they're going to get dialysis to save their life. And it's an ordeal. It takes a big chunk out of one's life, because isn't dialysis like an 8-hour process?
I don't know all the details. I know there's two kinds of dialysis. There's my friend in Louisiana. He was doing peritoneal, which means he did it at home. He did it every night. He got hooked up at 8 o'clock or 8:30 until six o'clock in the morning or something like that every night. He preferred that for a number of reasons. One thing, from what I understand, I'm not a doctor, but if you do it every day like that, it kind of keeps the body from going highs and lows so much.
Yeah.
And so if people have to go in every 3 days or something, then you're spiking all the time. There's peritoneal at home, and then I think it's called hemodialysis. That's where you go in to a center. But yeah, I mean, either way, like you said, I think it's just a slow death for most people.
Yeah, yeah, I've watched it. Unfortunately, it's you know, I know that my stepmother died from kidney disease. She was on dialysis. I was very struck by how it changed the way she looked. She didn't look the same, and it was kind of sad. I wasn't super close to her, but I did know that. And interestingly, she was a nurse.
Oh wow!
And what you're saying about taking care of yourself, she did as well. But I think that there might have been like a little inclination towards this, you know, the cookie jar kind of thing. And I can say I could be guilty of that too.
Well, yeah. I mean, we all are.
We're all human. We're all human.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. It's really a strange thing. You can go the other way too. In Wisconsin, where I live, I do a lot of mountain biking and got friends that I bike with. And most of them are younger than me. I'm the old guy out there. But after I made my first ride down to Louisiana, some of my mountain bike buddies, one of them especially, started talking to me. He was considering to kind of look into this donation thing. And he maybe 27 years old, he was asking me all kinds of questions. He said, well, you know, he said, I've had kidney stones. Like I've had 3 episodes of kidney stones.
Ooh.
And I said, well, I don't think they would consider you. You wouldn't be able to pass the physical evaluation with that.
Yeah, because those kind of rip you up in the inside, don't they?
Well, it's a condition that you don't want to take somebody's kidney out that's creating stones and put in somebody else. But I asked him, I said, what are you doing with kidney stones? I mean, the guy's, 27 years old, thin as a rail, strong mountain biker. He said, well, they did a biopsy of one of his kidney stones and found out that it was some acid. And it's the same. It's present in almonds, kale, and spinach.
Really?
Yeah, he was eating almost too healthy.
Wow.
And so there's you got to have balance in life. And of course, he was dehydrated too. And that was one of the other things that will cause that problem. So.
Oh, dehydration.
Yeah, dehydration. So people should drink more water. But yeah, and so there's an example of a person that probably took the fitness thing just a little too far, maybe.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, but, you know, we're not going to tell people not to eat healthy.
Oh, no.
I happen to love kale. It's one of my favorite things that I got turned on by my stepmother who died of kidney disease. Interesting. I just have to say it. It kind of made a full circle there. But, you know, this is a really interesting conversation. And I would love to follow up with you in another interview at another time. And I have to commend you for stepping up to the plate and doing what you felt was right. Because if there were more people, if there were more Mark Scotches in the world, if only there were more Mark Scotches in the world, we'd be better off.
My wife might not agree with that.
Oh, no, she knows it's true. She just doesn't want you to let it go to your head. That's all. She knows it's true. But I think that it's a beautiful thing that you did. And I really appreciate you bringing the awareness to the Oregon Trail on our show and the importance of kidney donation to just talk about it. This was what Lisa said. They're not going to ask you for your kidney, but just talk about this to people. I think it makes a difference. It obviously does, because look at you and look at your guy, you, with the kidney from someone. If you hadn't discussed it, perhaps he wouldn't have, who knows? I think it's that we should be more open about the things we talk about on this planet right now to just get a little closer, because we are very close to each other without even realizing it. So again, tell the audience they can find out more about your venture through the Oregon Trail on Facebook, you said?
Yep, the Oregon Trail, O-R-G-A-N, the Oregon Trail on Facebook. And then the website is www.theoregontrail.org.
And it's the National Kidney
Registry.
Registry.org. National Kidney Registry.org. And you can learn even more about it. So check it out, everybody. And I want to thank you so much, Mark, for coming on the show and taking the time to tell us about your journey. And I wish you all the best of luck, because I know you're going to be riding it for a while. You're going to be riding that bike for a while with one kidney. 1600 miles plus.
Yeah.
It's amazing. No, I'm amazed by it. I really am. And I think that the audience I can imagine they're as fascinated as I am. So until next time, everybody, I would really ask you to check out Mark Scotch's Facebook blog, The Oregon Trail, and consider kidney donation. I think it's a beautiful thing to do. And come back next week. I'll have another great guest for you. And I thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.